It's extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!
Hello Team FD and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast, where today we'll be doing our Champions League B-side, aka taking a closer look at some of the lesser known teams. Then we'll finish off the show with some quick fire predictions. But before we roll on, this week's episode is sponsored by our friends The Athletic, who are pretty much the Champions League of long form journalism. As well as covering each top league, they have a designated section for Europe's top competition. The best articles for the best tournament. And unlike the Champions League, it's completely ad-free. Not a Gazprom advert in sight. Zero aggravation, all football. Plus, with our exclusive discount code, theathletic.co.uk/Sunday Vibes, all lowercase, you'll get a 30-day free trial and 50% off an annual subscription. All that pub ammo for just £2.50 a month. Talking of European, I'm joined by two of the most cultured men in the office for this conversation. It's Joseph Tomlinson, it's Patrick Van Straten.
Howdy.
Hi.
Let's kick it off. All right, I'm kicking us off then with Lille, who I actually think stand a chance of getting out of Group H. Okay. They're in a Group H with Valencia, with Ajax and with Chelsea. Mm. And judging by last night's results, ugly on paper. Obviously a 3-0 away demolition against Ajax. But having dug a little bit deeper, I think they stand a good chance. 1.7 to 1.5 expected goals. They missed some absolute sitters away from home. I caught a bit of the Chelsea game. I don't think they look particularly strong. They're there for the taking. I think Valencia, having sacked Marcelino, leave them a little bit vulnerable. So I think this group is very much anybody's for the taking.
Yeah.
There's no clear stand outside. People will be shouting at home saying, well, Chelsea the best team there by distance. I don't think they are. Ajax, I think, probably the favourites to go through. And then second place is up for grabs here. Chelsea, Valencia, Lille. And I'm talking about Lille today because they're back, baby. After a 7-year absence from the Champions League, they are back in Europe's top competition after finishing second in Ligue 1. How did that happen?
Are they called Le Dogs? Le Dogues? Is that their nickname?
Yeah, it means Great Danes.
I mean, anyone with that nickname stands a chance.
Yeah, should probably be your second team here, Hamill. The Dogs. You like the catchphrase, the Dirty Dogs, don't you? Isn't that your
Mum
catchphrase?
Mum has just bought a dog as well, so very timely.
Hamill, the animal and all that. But if you rewind it just 18 months ago, or a bit further than that now, they were very close to being relegated in 17-18, the season before they qualified for the Champions League, of course. They finished just 1 point above the relegation zone. 38 points. Very ugly. If it had gone by expected points, they would have gone down 35, or at least been in the relegation playoff, I think they have in France, don't they? So what did they do to rectify that problem? Well, what they did was they hired one man, Luis Campos.
The ghost.
Technical director, the invisible man. This is his nickname, the invisible man. Nobody ever sees him. I don't know what he looks like. I've seen there's about 5 photos of him online, but apparently very rarely seen at games, usually hidden away in a dungeon on a laptop.
Is he just like one of those Football Manager players that has a question mark where his face should be?
He should. I imagine he does have one because he is obviously now getting a lot of notoriety. And you know what? Rightly so. Rightly so. I mean, he used to be a manager, not particularly good one. He has now popped into notoriety after some incredible signings and some incredible sales. But he was actually working with Mourinho, I didn't realise this, Mourinho as a scout and analyst in 2012 when he was at Madrid. And he was the guy that opted to bring Fabinho to Madrid on loan. Obviously, it didn't work out.
One appearance.
At the time.
The scourge of all who am I.
Appearance from Rio Ave. And he brought him in as a right back. But he's not only a scout, he's also a technical software developer. So he developed a new scouting system called Scouting System Pro, which basically allows teams and analysts to identify players easier.
Okay.
Okay, so he did that. And whilst he was at Madrid, he obviously grew his contacts book rather large. And after working with Jose Mourinho, he became good friends with one gentleman called Jorge Mendes, which is where What seems to happen is somebody gets to know Jorge Mendes and that unlocks the keys to the footballing kingdom. Like, I feel like Jorge Mendes is the key holder to everything that happens in European business. And that's what's happened with Luis Campos, because he left Madrid and where did he go? He went to Monaco. He was the man that was designated with changing their transfer strategy away from signing superstars like James and Falcao for extraordinary fees into finding diamonds in the rough and transitioning them into world-class players. So let's just rattle off some of the players he signed first year at Monaco. Bernardo Silva came in from Benfica for 15 million euros. Bakayoko came in from Rennes for 8 million. Fabinho, he took him again, this time on a permanent from Rio Ave for 6 million. Lamar came in from Cayenne for 4 million euros. Benjamin Mendy came in from Marseille for 13 million euros. Those boys didn't do badly.
Yeah.
I think second or third year obviously led them to a league and win and a Champions League semi-final, was it in the end?
Yeah,
semi-final, I think. So his pedigree at that stage could not have been higher.
Shit up.
Everybody wanted him. And where did he go? Lille. Bit of an odd choice. In my book,
great
anywhere.
Dane.
And it didn't start well at all. He hired Bielsa. And we all know how that story
ended. My God, that was so bad.
Yeah, obviously, they had a new owner at the time, just taken over, Gerard Lopez.
Can get Bielsa, you get Bielsa. It's a forgivable mistake.
Exactly. So him and Gerard Lopez, who is a tech billionaire who just acquired Lille at the time, he'd obviously bought Campos in, and they thought, I think, that Bielsa was going to be the man to take them back to the top.
So we know why he went to Lille now, if a tech billionaire takes over at the same time.
Yeah.
He's getting absolutely cheddar'd, breed out of his face.
Obviously went to fuck, didn't it? I think he took 12 points from the first 13 games. Then he went absence without leave, going back to Argentina to see a terminally ill friend, and then was sacked. And it just was a total catastrophe that Bielsa...
A more legit reason than when Tevez went to Disneyland. Do you remember that?
When was that?
Do you remember when Tevez went to Disneyland when he should have been playing for that Chinese club?
Oh, I do actually, yeah. I do actually.
The only connection there being that they're both Argentinian. But
didn't Tevez go and play golf for a year as well? Tevez is a notorious guy.
This should be a podcast special.
But anyway, yeah, let's get back to Lille because we're now sort of mid-2017. Bielsa's been chopped, haven't they? They bring in Christophe Galtier.
Galtier.
Terrible pronunciation. State of that pronunciation from me.
Sounds like a fragrance, doesn't it? Galtier.
Yeah, so they've got
Gaultier.
They've gone Galtier and they've got Luis Campos and Gerard Lopez as the owner. Campos basically takes it upon himself to rebuild the entire side. Reportedly flew 240,000 miles around the globe in 12 months, clocking up them air miles.
What a sick remit, though. Like, here's carte blanche to just go
and
find
me a new team.
I don't
know how many miles that is a day, but it feels too many.
But isn't it about 12,000 miles across the world? So is that like 10 round the world trips?
He's just continuously flying all the time.
What, and then just like plucking scouting people off the ground
players.
With like nets?
Yeah, scouting players, speaking to agents. I think it was on ESPN I read this article. So maybe they'd put the wrong decimal place and it should be 24,000. But it definitely said 240,000 miles because I could not believe it.
Do you know who would have got that spot on? The Athletic.
Yeah, the Athletic definitely would have. But yeah, he obviously identified a number of places that needed strengthening. He bought in Jose Font.
Yeah.
I think he would have gone from West Ham. I've just left West Ham.
Was he
in
China?
He was in China.
He was in China.
Pato says he's in China. He will have been in China. He bought in Zeki Celik for 2.5 million euros, the fullback. Jonathan Okone for 5 million euros. Jonathan Bamba.
Oh, the Jonathans.
Who played under Galtier at Saint-Etienne,
yeah,
right?
And Rafael Leao. Yeah. On a free, I think, might come from Sporting.
From Sporting Lisbon. He cancelled his contract after the training ground bust up. But before that, he'd been rumoured... as a target for Barcelona and Man City. It looked like Man City were going to get him that January.
Yeah.
Couldn't get the deal through. Contract ended after the whole, you know, situation. And ended up at Lille, of all places.
And both the Jonathans are creating over two chances per 90 this term. And they're like, you know, a couple of the most outstanding creators in Ligue 1.
I mean, these players were all bought last summer.
Mm.
So in the summer of 2018, after they finished 1 point above relegation.
Yeah.
So they're just surviving. Obviously, the season after, where Campos has really got his feet under the table, he signed all these players, they do very well, finishing second, and that's the reason they're in the Champions League. But again, this summer, massive turnover. They sold £130 million worth of player. Obviously, Nicolas Pepe being the obvious standout there, 22 goals, 11 assists last season. I think that was about half of the goals Lille scored in the league.
Yeah.
But he left for £72 million for Arsenal. Leao left £23 million to Milan.
Yeah.
I think Thiago Mendes, the defensive midfielder left for £19 million. A few other sales.
They're starting left back as well. Kone and Thiago Mendes both went to Lyon.
So he's got to do another 10 trips around the world to rebuild the squad. The carbon footprint on that, by the way.
I know.
Shocking.
Okay. There's still a lot of talent there, right?
Yeah, El Ghazi also left for £9 million, by the way.
Whatever.
So they've lost a lot of players, but they've signed a lot as well. They spent £75 million.
Wow,
No one big name in there, but a shitload of £9 million players. Obviously, Renato Sanchez was the main money spend.
But that is
18 mil.
Oh, they actually paid
on a permanent. Yeah,
yikes.
18 million on a permanent.
I bet he's good. I bet he's really good.
Yeah, he's also playing as a DM there.
Yeah, I imagine.
But he kind of
Thiago Mendes. He went to Lyon, right?
Yusuf Yazici came in £14 million from Trabzonspor. Never heard of him. Osimhen came in £11 million.
This is exciting.
From Charleroi, we'll come on to him in a bit.
And he's already repaid the fee.
Big Tim Weah came in £9 million from PSG. Yeah. I won't go through the rest of the list, but it goes on and on. Sort of £8 million.
They sound like smart acquisitions.
They sound very Luis Campos acquisitions. They've got the youngest squad in Ligue 1, 24 years old is the average age. They've only got 5 players over the age of 25 in their Champions League squad.
I remember last season I was writing something on them at one point, and there was a stage of the season when I think 73% of the minutes in the league, kind of available, have been played by players under 25.
Yeah.
73% of Lyon minutes. And the rest were pretty much all just José Font.
Yeah, and they're kind of...
And Thiago Mendes.
They're still lining up in that 4-2-3-1 that Galtier loves.
Okay.
They're kind of playing Osimhen up front as a lone striker. Loic Remy has been binned. Well, maybe a bit harsh, but has been dropped a little bit to the
bench.
Well,
he was kind of rotation last season.
He was kind of in a rotation with Leao, wasn't he? As more of a... out and out.
Well, and it was like Ikone, Bamba and Pepe were always like...
So Ikone and Bamba are still playing in there. Yazici is playing as the 10.
Okay.
And then they're all playing behind Osimhen, who is more of an out and out striker, I think, than Leao was last season. But he's obviously started ridiculously well, hasn't he? Osimhen, he's got 5 in 4 appearances for Lille. Definitely should have scored last night. Missed 2 absolute sitters away at Ajax.
The header, right?
The header,
though, I was kind of like, he gets up high, he directs it down, and Nana's just well positioned. Like, Nana's a good keeper.
Nana's a good save, but he's got to score. He has to score.
Maybe.
But he is playing well.
He's super young.
Yeah, he is super young. He's still only 20. And he had 2... I was reading The Athletic, actually, before we shot this podcast. And there was an article by Jack Lang in there. And he was detailing the players to watch out for, the young players to watch out for in this season's Champions League. And obviously, Osimhen was in there. And he was saying that he had a really bad problem with illness at Wolfsburg.
Yeah, malaria.
Was it malaria?
Mm.
He was very ill at Wolfsburg, and he was Wolfsburg for 2 seasons. And Charleroi last season kind of has resurrected his career. He was thinking about quitting and stuff.
He was not physically able, when at two different trials, one with Club Bruges or Circle Bruges, A Bruges, and one somewhere else. He was in really poor physical condition. They were like, we can't gamble on this guy. And Lille have, and it's paid dividends.
Yeah. So he's back firing 3 shots per 90. He looks like quite a physically strong player from the highlights I saw of him this morning anyway. I think he's 6 foot, still only 20 years old, started the season on fire, and it is helped when you've got Bamba and Ikone on the wings, who are just outstanding players, aren't they? I think you've already touched upon it, both putting up over 2 chances per 90. Last season, Ikone, 2,800 minutes, 12 goal involvements. Bamba, 3,000 minutes, 16 goal involvements. So I think both of those come with pretty high pedigree.
Who's the more famous Bamba, though?
What, Sol or Jonathan?
Yeah.
There must be another one.
I think probably Sol. But Jonathan set to overtake him when he gets a £40 million move to Dortmund probably in the summer. Mm. I would be surprised if either of those two are still at the club next summer, Ikone or Bamba, if they have another clear out, which kind of sporadically happens under every Luis Campos team. Monaco got cleared out. Second season at Lille got cleared out. They'll get cleared out again. But they've started the season okay. 5th in Ligue 1 at the moment, going steady, 9 points from the first 5 games, nothing exceptional. XG still pretty strong, but last year they had a very, very solid defence. They were kind of built on a really sound back line, and this season it looks to have weakened. And I don't want to say that Jose Font's finally gone over the hill, but I think he's finally gone over the hill. I think he's now 30.
Yeah, he crawled back up the hill last year.
Where's he, 37?
He's old.
36, 37,
I think he might
like
be
that.
36, yeah.
But yeah, he's played every minute of every game again so far this season.
Cool.
And they've got the 9th best expected goals against in the league. So they are struggling somewhat at centre-half. I'm sure they'll rectify that next year. But like I said, I think they could be an exciting team. I don't know. Did you guys catch any of Chelsea last night? You were on the stream, weren't you? Did you see any of Chelsea? How did they fare in the Champions League?
Zach had it on his phone. And I think XG had it about 1.6 to maybe like 0.4 in Chelsea's favour. Yeah. So I think they might have edged it. But of course, that penalty miss cost them big.
Yeah, and losing at home to an understrength Valencia side who have just lost their manager screams problems in the Champions League. They play Lille away next round, so I think October the 2nd, 3rd, that first week of October, they're travelling to France to play them, and I can see Lille turning Chelsea over again. And if Chelsea lose the first two games, I don't think they'll get out of the group.
Well, this is the thing with Chelsea so far, like, I think they've been pretty decent generally, but like, every team creates big chances against them. Like, they mostly control the game, they will outshoot their opponents, but when they give up chances, they give up big chances. And I think that Lille are perfectly positioned to make the most of that. They have so many smart, dribbly creators who can also score goals.
And we've seen how Chelsea are vulnerable on the break.
Yeah.
Especially, I think back to that Man United game, first game of the season.
Yeah, especially in wide areas, right?
And Norwich at times. And that's exactly what Lille are just exceptional at, like fast, transitional, positive football. And I can just, I think if you lose at home to Valencia, I think you've got to win one of your games against Ajax. And that, I don't think Chelsea will win at the Amsterdam Arena.
Steamroll Chelsea,
because you've got the prospect of that happening. I really think you've got the prospect of Chelsea getting turned over by Ajax quite heavily.
Really?
Yeah. And it's no shame for them not to get out of the group, but I'm sure Lampard will want to get out of the group to avoid the Europa. He won't want to finish third and drop into the Europa, I don't think, Frank, because that bites you like a bitch after Christmas, especially with how thin that squad is if they don't get that transfer ban lifted. So I think if I was to give a prediction of getting out of Group H with my team being Lille, I think Ajax will top the group. I think it'll be a very, very tough battle for second, but I think Lille can do it. I think Lille will get out of the group second despite that tough result against Ajax.
I think Chelsea will.
Big prediction. Yeah, I think Chelsea will probably get out one way or another. I'm not as confident about Ajax as you are.
But I like the ballsy nature of your prediction. Patrick, would you like to go second or shall I go second?
Mine's very short, so I can do mine quickly.
Okay, because mine has the potential to be long and, you know, sort
yours
of
is
go
more
off,
interesting.
Go off into some very, very lateral stuff. So why don't you give All us right. a nice short, sweet section?
My team are kind of at the opposite end of the market. You know, like, they're not going out and finding undervalued youngsters. They're finding ancient, overpaid guys who are possibly no longer good. It's Galatasaray.
Must be Turkey.
Yeah, well, zero chance.
See their third kit this week?
No.
Little grey number. It's another one of the Nike classics.
Okay.
They've been producing recently, the Inter, the Chelsea.
Doesn't matter. No one will ever see it. They're never getting out of the group.
I was also a huge fan of the Falcao announcement video. That was really good.
Have they got Falcao? When did Falcao leave Gala?
Well, brace yourself. Like, they're in a group with Club Bruges, PSG and Real Madrid, so I'm not seeing a second round space.
Europa League space is open from there, though.
I don't know. I reckon... Actually, no. When we look at the squad, I think basically their business model is kind of organised around the idea that they want to sell a lot of kits in Saudi Arabia. if you look at the guys they've signed. So, the squad now includes Jean-Michel Seri, Younes Belhanda, Radamel Falcao, Ryan Babel, Yuto Nagatomo, Sofyan Feghouli, Steven Nzonzi, Mario Lamina, Emre Moore, Florin Andone. They've got so many
They're going to win the Europa League.
They've got so many guys in on loan.
As much as that squad is crap, there are some decent players in there.
Yeah, like, I'm not saying...
I think that's the point he's making.
I'm not saying that's crap. I'm saying that, like, they are spending a lot of money. They're going to want some return for that. Because they won the league last year and the year before without all these guys. So if they bring these people in, like, what is going
to
happen?
Whatever.
At the moment, they're actually
Emre Moore.
Fifth.
Huh? He
was at Celta. He
Words
left
out my mouth.
Celta. And he's only on loan. So I still think that maybe there's a future for Emre Moore. I still think he's pretty young.
I feel like he just completes dribbles everywhere he goes and that's it.
Yeah, he's young Sofiane Boufal. That's what he is. And okay. Sofiane Boufal would be such a gala signing.
By the way, a gala signing.
They're currently fifth in the Super League after four games. They've won two, lost one, drawn one. But like I said, obviously champions in the last two seasons. Guess who they're managed by? It's exactly who you think it is.
Fatih Terim.
It is Fatih.
Yes!
He's in his fourth spell at the club. They've had quite an eventful start to the season. Like I said, four games gone in the Super League. Those games have seen six red cards.
Oh my God.
They beat Kayserispor 3-2 before the international break. It ended with 18 men on the field. Gala had someone sent off. Kayserispor had three people sent off.
What?
And then I think somebody was sent off after the final whistle, but I have not been able to
determine. Is this dodgy refereeing or is this a legitimate red card?
That was Fener, apparently.
Was it Fenerbahce?
That's not going to tricky territory.
Also feels, you know, like Turkish football. Like, yeah. This is classic Turkish football. Realistically, I think they're going to get serially pumped in this group. I think they're getting pumped 100-0 by PSG.
They're playing tonight?
Yeah, they're playing Club Brugge.
Okay, well, this is the Europa League decider.
Yeah, they're going to win the Europa League, mate. They're Falcao will score 15 goals in the Europa League.
I don't know. You look at this squad and I think, look, okay, there are better teams than them in the Europa League. However, do you want to go away to Istanbul and face a squad that has like Lamina and Nzonzi in midfield, that has like Falcao and Babel up front with Seri playing behind them, that has Emre Moore just dribbling around for fun? Like, I mean,
ideally not.
Do I think they're going to be good? No. Do I think they're going to be dangerous? Definitely. And I mean, I just don't really understand what the fuck they're up to.
Model seems odd, doesn't
it? Yeah, I was looking at this squad and I was like, what are you doing? Like, they've got, I think, six guys online. Why? They've got Falcao. Why do they also need Babel? Why do they also need Florin Andone? Why do they also need Emre Moore?
Is Florin Andone on loan?
Yeah, he
did. He leave because he got kicked?
What, Andone?
No, he got sent off. He was the one doing the kicking.
He got kicked by his own teammate on the way onto the pitch, didn't he?
Oh, I know exactly.
And he was
what
like,
mean.
What are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, it was
a bizarre clip.
It was a vicious boot, though. Yeah. It was no laughing matter. It was before the game as well.
I mean, also, he came in for pretty decent money. They probably thought that he was going to play some games, sat on the bench for a season behind Glenn Murray, and then they went and spent, what was it, 20 mil
Mopay.
On Mopay from Brentford. So,
and Trossard.
I can understand why he wants to leave. But Florin Andone, I actually think, is a really interesting counter-attacking striker. Had a great season in his last year in Spain before he went to Brighton. I think, like, he and Falcao, I think, is quite a fun front line. Why Fagulli's there, I have no idea. What Nagatomo offers, no idea at this point. Like, they're all so old, and most of them are shit. Like, Nzonzi has been... Nzonzi last season was, like...
Where was he?
Roma. He was legit dreadful.
He was supposed to be... Who's the boy that went to Marseille? No. Kevin Strootman. Strootman's replacement, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he's never... The thing about Nzonzi is he's never actually had good defensive numbers, really. Like...
Other than it's a bit...
Like, what? Even at Blackburn or Stoke?
Even
surely at Stoke,
he missed his opportunity to join Arsenal. I swear there's about a week where
when he was at Blackburn, yeah. And if we'd got the years of him when he was at Sevilla, he was actually pretty damn good. Like, but now he's old as hell. He can't walk anymore. Like, if you're too old for Serie A, you're ancient. But I just think Lamina's a really good signing generally. I think Moore's probably going to tear Turkey apart.
Who's the centre mids? Lamina and...
Nzonzi.
And...
Seri.
See, Jean-Michel Seri and Lamina is like a pretty dynamic midfield.
It's quite good fun. I think they're actually going to be really, really interesting. I don't know why you'd have Lamina and Nzonzi. I don't know why you'd get Fagulli and Falcao and Babel. Like, it just... the maths of it do not add up to me. However...
Fagulli sounds like a starter, by the way. I'll have the Fagulli.
I
know what you mean,
Did he come directly from Valencia? Or has he been travelling since...
Who
Valencia?
Are we talking
Fagulli?
About?
Fagulli. Because last time I saw... Was he not at Valencia?
He was at West Ham.
Oh, my God, was he?
Yeah, he was at West Ham.
Looking at the producer, Mike, here. He just... West Ham will sign anyone, won't they?
Yeah, but you look at West Ham squad now and you're like, do you remember... It's insane that there was a time where Fagulli was just starting for them. But anyway, I think Galatasaray, a season of disappointment for them. But, you know, like I say, there are going to be lots of knockoff kits like being sold in Marmaris with Falcao on the back.
You know, Lamina must have the best propaganda agent going.
What do you mean?
I think he's got the worst.
No.
Lamina's actually pretty good.
Is he?
Yes.
Well, because this summer he was like linked to like Man United,
Arsenal.
Yeah. I think Tottenham at one stage, and he's ended up at Galatasaray.
Yeah, but he also came out of Juve, where he's a pretty useful part. Before that, he was at Marseille, where he was a useful part under Bielsa. Like, I mean, I do think he could. He is a good player. He's clearly a Premier League quality central midfielder, which is like a pretty good thing to be. And instead, he's going to be a Super League midfielder. I mean,
I feel like when you go out in that general direction, you are just going to keep going further east. I can see him turning out for an Indonesian side in about 4 years.
Nah, you've got to go to China.
He might end up coming back. Some people do make the trip back from Turkey.
He might be a little bit too old.
Who has survived a career in Turkey? From the ages of 25 to 30.
There's got
to
be someone.
I think there will be somebody. But I mean, like, but also we've seen Axel Witsel come back from China. We've seen Jose Font come back from China. So like, I don't
that
see
why like Tyson Fury.
I don't see why there's any reason Axel Lamina Witsel. Can't. Like, I think it's entirely possible that in a couple of years he's available.
On loan?
I think so. Okay. But in a couple of years, like, he'll be available on a free. And like, you know, like a German team will pick him up. Like Frankfurt will pick him up and he'll be good.
The same can be said of like Jean-Michel Seri. Like Jean-Michel Seri, before he joined Fulham, was so hyped. Yeah. Like, I remember we sat here talking about Jean-Michel
Seri. He was going to Barcelona.
He was going to go to Barcelona.
Had no, but numbers. He was going to Barcelona. They had a deal agreed and they pulled the plug at the last minute.
It was like 40 mil, wasn't it?
It was fucking mental. Like, yeah. He had a decent shot of going to a good club. He went to Fulham. Fulham, to be honest, like, didn't really think it through. But generally speaking, like, they did make some good transfers. And I think Seri is a good player. Like, so... I think that actually, if I were a kind of mid-table club in France or Germany, you know, like Eintracht Frankfurt playing like Jonathan de Guzman and playing Jetro Willems in midfield.
Jonathan
last
de Guzman's
season.
Not still playing.
Like, yeah,
is
he is.
Oh,
yeah, he's still about. Like,
oh my, not the Swansea centre mid.
Do you not think that they could just go and say, okay, we'll have Lamina? Like, he can't be that bad.
Not the Swansea centre mid, de Guzman.
Yeah.
Oh my.
I think he
God.
Actually played on the wing quite a bit as well. Wow. Went to Napoli as well, Jonathan de Guzman. Jesus. So,
Napoli
yeah.
With a hell of an agent.
Well, yeah. So, Galatasaray, like, there's not a lot to say about them. Are they
getting out of the group, though? Are they going Europa League? What's your prediction for your group?
I reckon they probably will get Europa League.
Remind me of the group again.
Club Bruges, PSG, Real Madrid.
So, we're saying Real Madrid top it, PSG second?
I think PSG top it, Real Madrid second.
PSG top, Real Madrid second, and then...
Gala Bruges.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Except I would have Real Madrid top ahead of PSG.
I don't really think Real Madrid are very... good, but I know where you're coming from.
They just—I think
it's a bit. I think it's a bit of a coin flip.
It's also Zidane fever, isn't it? Like, just somehow lucks his way.
They've been
group.
Rubbish, man.
And what I was reading a little bit about Benzema before this show, and what's happened to him at the start of the season.
He's got 4 goals and an assist through the first 4 games.
Worrying.
Yeah, he is overperforming a bit. But Tuchel said today, actually, Tuchel said Benzema is one of the most underrated players in world football, which is exactly the sort of shit you say about a team before you pump them. So,
are they playing tonight?
Yes, oh, PSG Real Madrid. On the live stream, I will have been on that by the time anyone hears this.
Yes. Let's get a prediction for everybody now so people can mock us for that
for
game.
PSG,
for
Real
PSG
Madrid.
Versus Real Madrid. Is it at PSG?
Is it the Parc de Prince or is it at the Santiago Bernabeu?
I think it's at the Parc de Prince.
Mike will know in less than 10 well. Seconds. It's the Parc de Prince.
It's at the Parc de Prince. Okay, so in order for you guys to mock us openly on Twitter, let's
Neymar
give our predictions now.
Is suspended, by the way.
Neymar's suspended, although
games.
It has been reduced
is
to
Mbappe
two.
Is Mbappe back?
No.
So Mbappe's out and Neymar's out?
Yeah, both of them are out. I think
maybe I changed my prediction to Real Madrid top in this group.
1-1.
I think 2-1 Madrid.
I think it will actually be really boring. 1-1.
Game week 1 in the Champions League is always deceivingly low key.
Oh, honestly, the games from the first evening, I was like, these look like Europa League fixtures.
Other
these
than one team, mate, who you're about to talk about. So
oh, like, what a segue.
They're going to win the Champions League.
That's right. I'm talking about RB Salzburg, who, of course, can't refer to themselves as RB Salzburg in the Champions League because it's against rules and regulations. They have to be called FC Salzburg in the Champions League.
I thought that was a really? Different club. I thought there was a different club in Salzburg. Like, you can't just take another team. Why don't they just call them like Barcelona?
Because this is how
they
the reason they're called Rasenball Sport rather that, than
that's because,
RB.
But that's because of Bundesliga rules. Bundesliga said they couldn't be called Red Bull so Leipzig, they're called Rasenball Sport, which is like a nonsense phrase. It basically means kind of lawn ball sport Leipzig. Something like that.
But I like it. It's creative. It's a good workaround. And ultimately, Red Bull...
Stop apologising for like...
I'm a suit
corporatisation.
I'm a suit.
Football. Yeah, you are. You're such a closet Tory.
Red Bull get their own way. How dare you?
Wow, it's kicking
Mike,
up.
Mike, stop the podcast.
Neoliberal.
I'm going to strangle Patrick on his XLR cables. Right. Neoliberal. Right, okay. This is not the sort of content the Athletic wanted us to produce, okay?
Yeah, it is. It's exactly the sort they wanted. Straight. Pandering to another corporation now. What's the matter with you? Leave the Athletic alone. Don't drag them into
just
your
pound signs
your
in
decline.
In my irises. Anyway, RB Salzburg. I mean, it was only... I think this might have been last season that Afton Bladet had to apologise for going over the top in their criticism of RB Salzburg. This was ahead of a match against Malmo when they compared them to Adolf Hitler. A journalist wrote in the publication, Austria has not only given us Joseph Fritzl and Adolf Hitler.
He hasn't really given them Joseph Fritzl.
I mean,
I don't think he's ever been there.
True. Let's not go too much into the wording.
Bit of a homebody.
I feel like this is flawed in quite a lot of senses. There is also Red Bull Salzburg, the most hated football club of our time.
Not as hated as Leipzig.
And also, you're Swedish. Like, don't get on the Nazi issue. Like, there's a big Nazi problem in Sweden. Where are you going?
Have you read the Millennium Trilogy?
Loads of Nazis.
It's all there.
Can we move on from Nazis?
No,
please?
We're going to carry on with Nazis.
I think probably not the best subject to delve into. Anyway, I brought that up because it basically is a good entry point into how the football world perceives RB Leipzig, even RB Salzburg, the larger RB family, and sort of some of the issues they've had to overcome and how they've redefined themselves as a club since they were rebranded in 2005. So let me give you a brief intro into Salzburg's relationship with the Champions League first, then we'll do some of the history, because they are a fascinating club, and I have bit off more than I can chew here. And this will have to extend to an episode of One on One on Euro.
I love it when your section has a contents page.
Yeah, Euro Football Daily
is going to be this.
I have actually got a contents page. Of course, yeah, like I said, there's more here than I can possibly get through in the next 15 to 20 minutes. So it's the first time the club has qualified for the competition in nearly a decade, and that is because they are perpetual bottle jobs. Now, this has included losses to F91 Dudelange of Luxembourg. Yes, a very good shout. Hapoel Tel Aviv, Maccabi Haifa, Fenerbahce, twice to Malmo of Sweden, so a bit of history there. Clearly quite bitter. Dinamo Zagreb in extra time and Rijeka on away goals.
Okay.
So not a great pedigree of team to be losing to, especially given the amount of investment in the club since 2005.
And the level of quality they have.
Yeah. I mean, in 2018, they lost to Red Star Belgrade despite holding them to a 0-0 draw away from home and taking a 2-0 lead at home. In many ways, they draw a lot of parallels with Celtic. They just get to that final stage and then it's nosebleed territory because they know that the complexion of their season rides on that game. And ultimately, yeah, bottle it, like I said. Didn't need to qualify for this year's competition as both Liverpool and Tottenham finished in automatic UCL places in the Prem. So that went to the Bundesliga as sort of like the best, the Austrian Bundesliga, that is sort of the best of the rest.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that seen as the sixth best league?
No, they're ranked 12th by UEFA, ahead of like the Swiss, the Scots, the Danish, the Greeks. So they've...
I think that probably all sounds quite fair. Yeah, I think the Austrian league's pretty decent.
They've slowly climbed the UEFA's coefficient. And they have been very good in the Europa League. Like you've said, this has come as virtue of, you know, I think they've gone like 13 games unbeaten at home in the Europa League. They got to the semi-final, didn't they? Eventually knocked out by Marseille, who ultimately came second. I think that might have been 2017.
Should have beaten Marseille.
It was the year before last.
2017 or 2018? 2017-18. And they've actually won all six group stage games in the Europa League three times, which is currently a record. So, I mean, they might not have been on it.
Too good for that competition.
Yeah, in the Champions League. But they've also got some very good Champions League alumni at the club. And this kind of, again, we'll pick up on this in a moment because they are very, very good at exporting talent. And this is kind of what is helping reverse the image of them in some people's eyes. I mean, Mane and Keita returned to the competition as champions. Both came from Salzburg. You've got Berisha at Lazio, Kletikar at Marseille, De Boer at Sevilla, a host of Leipzig players. I can barely speak today. I've got a really blocked nose. And yeah, I mean, their match against Genk in game week one was their first in the competition since 94-95 when they were referred to as SV Austria Salzburg. Because, of course,
and
the takeover.
My God, was it a battering?
The takeover hadn't happened at that point.
Are you going to come on to the game later?
I will come on to the game. And we touched upon our UCL review this morning.
Did you see the XG?
Yeah, it's like 4.4.
Yeah. Absolutely horrendous. They just battered them.
And 26 shots.
And Genk are the champions of Belgium at the moment, but they're also like eighth in the league. So.
And they were bush.
Yeah, they were bush. Right. Although they still at times cut through Salzburg a little bit at the back.
Yeah, they did.
Some pretty good chances.
It was so fun. They're going to be so much fun to watch.
And when can we talk about Haaland?
And Jesse March. Jesse March is an interesting
My running
well.
Order is very debatable in this.
Okay.
So I'm not sure.
talk to us about the history or something then, and then we'll come back to the game.
All right. Domestically, their pedigree is pretty unquestioned at this point. They've won 10 of the last 13 Austrian Bundesligas, including 6 in a row. And their start to this season, all the more impressive because of the talent they exported in the summer. So they got rid of 5, pretty much first team players, raised $83 million in the process, only spent $26 million bringing in players like Haaland, who we'll touch upon in a minute, and since 15-16 have recorded a positive transfer balance of $190 million. They are turning their team over year in, year out, whilst improving performance.
It's insane. Yeah,
I mean, that consistency, but then it owes itself to a few things, but...
And it's not just, like, consistency of player as well. It's, like, consistency of manager. Like, Jesse March comes... Yeah. There's clearly, like, a Red Bull philosophy that is being followed throughout, where it's, like, New York to Salzburg to Leipzig is the path if you want to take it. It's, like, been followed now by... Did Tyler Adams come
through? No, he went straight to Leipzig.
He missed out the Salzburg.
But some combination.
Clearly
of those
a path,
two.
Isn't there? Because Jesse March was the head coach of New York Red Bulls, but then came in as the assistant manager for Marco Rose.
Mm.
So now he's taking the helm at Salzburg. It's like, this is obviously the boys, jobs for the boys there.
This is the thing, though. Like, I really resent the thing of Aftonbladet saying that they're the most hated club. And I know a lot of people hate these clubs because money's been pumped into them. But actually, they're also doing things that no other clubs are doing. So, for instance, there is a whole generation of West African talent that essentially exists in European football because of the Red Bull group. So, particularly out of Mali and Guinea. So, like, there are guys like Samaseku, Keita, Haidara. These are all West African young midfielders who would... quite possibly have not got a move, or might have maybe got into Italy at the latter stages. That would have what would have happened 20 years ago.
And this is all really encompassed in their philosophy, and there's obviously some very influential people, including Ralf Rangnick, who kind of sets the tone, sets the parameters they operate in, and we'll touch upon him in a moment. And their current sporting director, Christoph Freund, has actually said a number of times in the public domain that we look to acquire young coaching talent as much as players, and that, you know, that that you just talked about is kind of a shining example of that. And I also think, like, it's not cheap. You can understand some of the fans' issues with what RB did. They were pretty brutal with the rebranding. We'll touch upon that in a second. But actually, Salzburg have a very checkered history when it comes to being, you know, commercialised. So, I mean, as much as people are against Red Bull, they were called SV Casino in 1978 after being sponsored by a casino, then a real estate company. But
they don't even specify the casino.
Maybe they're the only casino in Austria, mate.
Then a real estate company took over and called them Wüstenrot Salzburg. The company was called Wüstenrot. That was as late as 1997. And in the Austrian second division at one point, I think they folded in 2004-05, there was a team called scinterwetten.com.
So what's going on? Why does everybody hate him so much?
I went looking for that counterpoint, and I found one in the form of Alex Januszewski from Red Bull Salzburg fan group Raging Bulls. He said
exceptional
this
name.
In an interview with City AM. The takeover by Red Bull was actually a rescue, to tell the truth. SV Austria Salzburg had no money and no opportunities. This is a little bit long, but I'm going to roll with it. The club is much more professional now. The communication with the fans is superb. The takeover was the best solution for the club. And obviously, don't know much about his personal profile. Don't know if he's a mouthpiece for the club.
Not a real human. Red Bull have installed him there. And it's just he's just made up of cans.
He's just a 6-foot can, I've been an Austria Salzburg fan since 1974. Without the financial investment of Red Bull, the club would have vanished from Austria's top league, which happens pretty regularly in that division. When Red Bull came, all the fans' concerns were about the club's colours and traditions they lost, because they formerly played in violet and white. People took great umbrage to the fact that they swapped to red and white. They just redid the crest. They got rid of a load of staff. Obviously, there was a human cost in that. Yeah. But he says, this was bullshit. Football is an industry in Austria and in England. Players play for money and their time in this job is limited. Now, he seems like quite a cutthroat bloke. But that is a counter-argument to, Red Bull are ruining football. I mean, they're doing some innovative stuff. Like, that club wasn't profitable anyway. Its status was up for debate.
And I guarantee they employ more people and pay them better wages now than the club did back then.
Probably. But let's move on to Ragnik, because he is the sporting director across the RB portfolio, and he's implemented the template that kind of has guided them to success since. Previously coached clubs like Stuttgart, Hannover, Schalke, Hoffenheim. Actually took the latter to the Regionalliga Sud, didn't he? From the Regionalliga Sud to the top division in just two seasons. And he's kind of since influenced people like Julian Nagelsmann, who is, of course, now the manager of Leipzig. So he arrives as sporting director for the portfolio of clubs, which includes like Red Bull Brazil. Is the Red Bull Ghana? I think there might be one in Ghana. I think there might be one in Uruguay. An affiliate in Uruguay.
New York.
Yeah, obviously. That was like 2012. And he proceeds to find all these prodigious like managerial talents.
So why haven't they done one in England? Because there was a lot of chat, wasn't there, for a while? Well, they were going to take over...
Leeds.
Was it Leeds?
Yeah. I read an article from 2013, Red Bull Leeds.
Sick. So why didn't they never take over any English team, Red Bull?
I imagine, despite, like, contrary to popular belief, it's actually quite hard to be granted ownership of a club, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it's even harder to change the name in to the like Red League, Bull Leeds. Yeah. Red Bull Leeds would go down
also, the
so
cost
badly.
Is just higher. I think you could just pick up clubs for less money elsewhere.
Yeah, it is. You're right. That's very true.
And the owner of Red Bull, like, he's from Austria, isn't he? So this, I think Salzburg, this is ground zero. And then he's just picking up clubs since. I'm sure he's interested in English clubs. But Ragnik found people like Roger Schmidt at Paderborn. He was, I think they were in the German second division at the time. Since then, there's been Adi Hütter, Marco Rose. And I think, did they approach Rose while he was at Leipzig? And he kind of spent like 4 years in the youth system. And now they've got the American, haven't they?
Jesse Marsh.
Yeah, Jesse Marsh has come in. He was New York Red Bulls manager, like you said. He was Ragnik's assistant at Leipzig. He's now the first American coach to coach in the UCL. I mean, his history as a footballer wasn't particularly magnificent. 14 seasons in the MLS. He was assistant manager to Bob Bradley as well, US men's national team.
Well, he played under Bob Bradley when he's a Princeton graduate. Oh, okay. And so, like, when he was at Princeton, Bob Bradley was coach of the Princeton Tigers, so he played there as well.
He spent some time as manager of Montreal Impact. When I said, like, the reach of this research isn't refined, it's not. I've got loads of notes out in front of me. I'm not quite sure where I'm going with this next. But he's now the manager. Obviously, great start to the Champions League with that 6-2 demolition of Genk. We'll talk about Haaland in a minute. But aside from some of the managerial acquisitions, we might as well talk about some of the talent that they've hoovered up in the last 5 or 6 years, because it's an extremely impressive resume, especially when you consider the sort of what we touched upon earlier, the fact that they're making money. So bringing in players like Timo Werner in 2016 for €14 million, Willy Orban was €2 million.
He's been like
Kaiserslautern
legend.
He's now a club captain. He of course joined him in the second division, didn't he, as well. Yusef Poulsen for €1.3 million. It's just absolutely ridiculous. Naby Keita was like, what, €1.5 million?
Out of like Limoges or Tours.
Yeah,
or
just
something.
I mean, not many people are really regenerating talent in the way that they are. And last year when they actually met Celtic in the Europa League and they walked away with a 3-1 victory, they had two players from the youth setup in there. So, you know, it's still like a...
It's okay.
The first team is accessible to those guys. But the rest of the team was put together for less than Celtic bought Odson Edouard for, which was £9 million from PSG, which is extremely, extremely impressive. And of course, they're in Group E with Napoli, Liverpool, so it's going to be a tall, tall order to get out of that group.
But they've beaten Napoli before, or they knocked them out in the Europa.
What sort of odds do you think they're up against?
I think Liverpool are going to win the group.
Yeah.
But they stand a great chance, especially with that goal difference after last night of going through. Is it on goal difference or is it head-to-head?
head-to-head.
I think it might be head-to-head, but yeah, I'd back them to overthrow Napoli, despite the fact that Napoli are managed by one of like the Champions League's greatest ever managers, Carlo. I think that Salzburg will do it. Like Salzburg, whoever they're playing, I back them to have a tactical system worked out that's at least going to limit the opposition. Mm. Like I watch like Napoli and stuff, and I think, you beat Liverpool, but I still feel like they could go to Anfield and lose 5-0.
Yeah,
like I just don't think Salzburg will go to an Anfield and get whacked.
Or if they do, it'll be because they thought we're probably going to get whacked anyway, so we're going to like play direct against
exactly.
them. And they're building something as well. You know, like a couple of seasons ago, they won the UEFA Youth League, didn't they? When René Maric was one of the when he and Marco Rosa were in charge of the team, so they are bringing through that talent. And now you think about somebody like, you know, Dominik Szoboszlai. Is he even 19 yet? Who's a key member of the side and got a goal last night? They're so young that you think, okay, well, it feels like a Europa League will come at some point. A Champions League, I think, is obviously further off. But like, they're definitely
stand a great chance.
They're not far away from being one of those sides
who's
who are routinely in the under 16
in that group. Salzburg,
Genk,
who they decimated. So obviously,
Genk could finish with like a minus 30 goal difference in that group. I'm not even joking.
I mean, they're guaranteed Europa League football at this point, aren't they? Like you just kind of anticipated, they're a really young squad as well, which. It might be a season too early for them to do anything meaningful in the Champions League. I think an average age of 24.
That's older than I thought it'd be.
They have already scored like 50 goals this season.
It's like older than Leipzig's, but it'd still be the youngest in the Premier League.
Sure.
So it's still pretty bloody young. I think like Zlatko was it. You know, Unizovic is like the oldest player in the starting 11 at 31.
I think they've got an average of 23.7 was the starting lineup last night.
Okay.
Which is, I think, the youngest in the Prem so far has been United, and I think it was like 24.2.
The only downside for them is obviously when they do perform well in European competition, they know that they're going to get pilfered. Like, so the question isn't like when will Haaland leave, it will be like does he go to Leipzig or does he go elsewhere.
Yeah, Timo Werner goes to Bayern and Haaland goes to to Leipzig.
Haaland's going to Leipzig,
but then Leipzig are going to be facing stiff competition from teams. It's not
definitely.
I think now teams,
Szoboszlai as well, who was linked to Arsenal,
I think
in the
teams
winter.
Have now twigged on that Salzburg is this breeding ground, and whereas you saw players like Naby Keita, he was at Salzburg first, wasn't he?
Yeah,
at Salzburg go to Leipzig. I think now that pathway, rather than being like, oh, it's just a straight line, we can kind of backdoor them in.
Yeah.
Did Upamecano do the same thing? Sure he did, actually.
No. Upamecano came straight from France.
But was it Muniz de Boer did as well?
No, Muniz de Boer has gone to, he's gone to Sevilla.
A few of the Salzburg boys, though, that have gone to Leipzig.
Have kind of backdoored
it. And I just think that backdoor is like gone now. Like teams are like, right, we are going to compete 100% for this player. Out of Salzburg.
Samaseku went off to Hoffenheim this summer. So yeah, I mean, I do think people will notice that, especially if you need a certain kind of player. What they're good at is creating like good forwards and two-way central midfielders. Those are the things they make.
Interesting.
We're yet to see them produce real fullbacks or anything.
And interestingly, though, we haven't seen them produce an out-and-out striker yet. Like, really. Like, Mane's come through. And
well, Dabo is a striker. But before that, the guy, of course, was Jonathan Soriano, who went off to China.
And he was scoring at a ridiculous notch over there. And I think what's kind of happening, which is weird, is that Premier League clubs are now kind of going to use them as a second team. Like, even though they're the Red Bull link to Leipzig, to Salzburg, to New York, all the way down to wherever is Red Bull Ghana or whatever, like, Premier League clubs are now just going to go, okay, that's going to be like one of our identification areas.
Well, because
like,
you know as well they'll Salzburg. Sell.
Yeah, you know they're going to sell. We're going to sell for a decent price. And if you can get them before they go to Leipzig, if you're trying to get them out of Leipzig, you're probably paying like five times the price you're paying out of Salzburg.
Salzburg will set, like, they're not interested in names, they're interested in young talent. Like, and then when they become a name, they acknowledge that, yeah, they can't keep them. And you're just hoping as a Premier League club that you can do enough to unsettle that player, wherein it's worth them kicking up a fuss and not just naturally going to Leipzig.
Yeah, I suppose like Haaland will be one of them this summer
and remaining in the family.
Like, Haaland's gonna have one season there, isn't he?
Yeah, almost certainly, because he's already on like 18 goals or something.
18, I think he scored 4 hat tricks.
I mean, they've come a long
and
way
he's got
since
a bunch of assists as well.
Like SV Casino Salzburg, haven't they? And in like, well, since the takeover in 2005, so they're playing Genk, and Genk is sort of like, well, 5-6 years ago, were acknowledged as like a talent factory themselves, weren't they? Andrew Naylor for The Athletic actually did a really good article on how many top European players have come through there, kind of, you know, from KDB to Trossard, who's just gone to Brighton. He was immense in the Europa League last campaign, wasn't he? So there's kind of been this transformation where in like within 15 years they've become the go-to for top young players, which is an amazing turnaround from being hated.
How many do you think Haaland finishes on this season?
He's already got four hat tricks, mate. So I don't really want to guess.
Goals, no comps.
They're averaging 5.3 goals a game in the first seven games.
He's going to slow down a bit because he's currently scoring even above his expected goals, which are themselves obscene. But I think I don't think like 40 is ridiculous. He's halfway there.
40 goals, he gets a big money move to the Premier League. Like people talking about, he could go to Leeds, no chance. If he gets 40 goals this season, I think he goes to a top six Premier League.
Yeah, you look at the clubs who are going to be looking for strikers next year, or who are going to be looking for another forward, and
Liverpool.
You know, maybe you think like Liverpool's. Well, I don't know. If Werner's kind of available for 30 million, a bunch of people are in for Haaland. It'll be interesting to see how high they can push people, because they've never really sold someone for huge money in Salzburg.
Yeah,
whereas if everyone's in for Haaland, it'd be anything.
True that. Not really seen like his numbers on a granular level. I've seen him play and I've seen him destroy teams, and he has got a really unique skill set, and that he's massive and he's got really good acceleration.
Fast.
Great feet as well.
And he's got a good touch, yeah. And he's kind of got that kind of
attitude. Does look like he's been bred in a lab, doesn't he? He is a lab baby.
Yeah, he's been made and not created.
Did he play for Ollie at Mulder, or did they miss each other?
Yeah,
he did.
But I think he was given his debut.
Those links will be
by Solskjaer.
Those links will be forever, ever happening to Manchester United.
Well, he can go and play for the club which ended his dad's career.
Yeah, although because he loves Solskjaer, probably if he gave him his debut, they will be like, imagine the Daily Mail will be pumping those articles out all summer.
Yeah, but Leipzig are just, this is the thing that I think, you know, merits kind of going back to though, with Rangnick and of course with Luis Campos. Luis Campos. Yeah. I always want to say Lucas Ocampos.
I know.
But Luis Campos, like, they are obviously good at talking to players and saying to them, this is where you want to get and we can get you there. Because, you know, Renato Sanchez probably had other offers. You know, like, these guys probably had like different offers, but they're very good at going to them and saying, okay, here's what we can offer you in return for what we know you'll offer
us. And
they've
all got proof. It's all like, these are the 15 players that I've turned from struggling career to superstar over the last 5 years. And like Renato Sanchez can look at Fabinho and go, that's me. I went to a big club and it didn't work for me. And now I can restart at a middling club like Fabinho did with Monaco.
Yeah.
And then suddenly he's a fucking superstar in 18 months later.
Maybe this will be a tactic with some of the bigger clubs as they go in and try and get players out of clubs like Salzburg. Maybe they'll say, okay, well, you can buy our player, but in return, we want, say, two of your youngsters. You know, if you're, say, Man City or Liverpool. And maybe those youngsters will start to see Salzburg as quite a good springboard. They know they're going to play, at the very least, Europa League football, but possibly Champions League. And they know if they're good, they'll go to Leipzig. So it might be quite appealing.
Yep,
for a Ryan Brewster type, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Leipzig is, and German football as a whole, but Leipzig has already become that destination, hasn't it? So, and like I say, that's another thing where they're kind of just ebbing away at that reputation of being like these corporate shills. Actually, they're nurturing these real prodigious talents who aren't getting a chance in the like cash rich land of milk and honey in the Premier League. So I think they'll, saying that, probably struggle to finish second in a very competitive group. I do think Napoli are more feeble than times gone by.
So you think Liverpool, Napoli, Salzburg, Genk?
I think probably, yeah.
I'm going Liverpool, Salzburg, Napoli, Genk.
I'd love to see that. I'm actually going to watch that group this year.
Yeah. All right, so that's it for this segment, but we've got one little special segment still to come. And that special section is Champions League predictions. Right, we're going to rattle off some of the obvious ones. So, boys, starting with winner of the Champions League. Pato, coming to you first.
Liverpool.
Again?
Yeah.
Even with the same squad?
I'm just not that impressed by anybody else. Like City's defence has been really bad to start the season. The Norwich one, were they maybe a bit unlucky to lose it? Yeah, but on the other hand, their defence, it's been coming. And Barcelona are a state, so it's possible Messi comes in and fixes everything, but it's possible he gets injured more. I don't know. I don't look at anybody else and find them particularly impressive this season. And Juve have had a pretty up and down start to the season.
Lackluster Juve have been at the start of the season, apart from that 4-3 thriller. And even then, Kalidou Koulibaly secured all the points.
They had a draw against Fiorentina the other day, and I think they had like 6 shots or something.
They had a draw against Fiorentina. They're averaging 11 shots per 90.
Yeah.
Which is not good, because Atalanta are averaging 21. Napoli are averaging like 19. Juve. Yeah, they drew with Parma on the opening day as well. I don't know how Higuain keeps Dybala out of the side, Ronaldo's on the left.
He hasn't been great.
I'm just not all for that, to be perfectly honest.
I don't like the lineup Sarri's using at all.
Well, he's off. Also, Sarri wasn't on the touchline for a couple of those, right?
Yeah. I think he's back now, though. Yeah. I think he might be on the weekend.
Okay. Who else is there that's really? I want.
Nobody's saying PSG.
I think PSG are actually quite interesting dark horse. Like, everybody has this attitude of like, because PSG have never won, they will
all
never win.
All comes down to Neymar being fit.
But they'll get out of the group stage because their group is Galatasaray and Bruges in it.
Yeah, they'll finish second potentially.
But even if they do, like, I don't think that there's anybody in the Champions League I look at this year and think, wow, that side is utterly unbeatable.
True.
And if Mbappe, Neymar... Plus, they've got Herrera, Gay. Like, there's a lot of talent there, and they're hard to beat.
I think Atletico Madrid, for me, are probably more interesting underdog.
They're not very good either. They got handily dismantled at the weekend as well.
But I'd rather... Yeah, okay. I'd rather have a solid defence and a kind of misfiring attack.
They lost 2-0, like, comfortably to Sociedad, right?
And also, like... There was the whole... All of their shots have been, like, valued at a ridiculously high
chance. Yeah, they're averaging
chance.
6 shots a game. It's fucking stupid.
And, like, that's now ended. Like, people were like, this could be a tactic from Simeone. And it's now quickly realised that, no, it's not.
there's no big team that is kind of has that air of invincibility that a Manchester City had last season.
Yeah, I agree.
You assume Barca will find it. That's the thing with Barca.
As soon as Messi's back, Barca will
be back. On the live stream yesterday, I said Barcelona.
Yeah,
and I'll probably have to stick with Barcelona, but it's nice there's no outstanding candidate. It's good.
Yeah, I'm twisted and turning between them all. I think Real Madrid stand a very good chance.
I don't know. I'd give Real Madrid the same chance I give Tottenham.
I think I'll give them a better chance than that.
I think PSG are more likely to win it than Real Madrid,
I'll go Real Madrid, but I'll probably change week on week until I see who gets out of the groups. Okay, top scorer.
Okay, let's do 3 sections. Top goal scorer, what bottle jobs. Top goal scorer, who was it? Was it Robert Lewandowski, or was that just in the group stages last year? Who's in Bayern's group? Massively underprepared.
Top scorer for me, I think, will be Mbappe.
Even though we know for a fact he's going to miss a couple group games.
I think he only misses one.
Really?
I think he only misses one. I think he's meant to be back the week after next, and I think the next group game is October the 2nd. So I think potentially Mbappe.
Even if Haaland just gets one a game from here on in, it's going to take some stopping, isn't it? Anyone else? Did anyone else begin in such explosive fashion?
Harry Kane, who's yet to play yet. You've obviously got Benzema, who started the season
Lewandowski.
Well, yet to play. Messi won't be joining the competition till late, might play.
Well, he played last night.
But he came on off the bench, didn't he?
Yeah. But you assume he's going to be able to come back now.
Yeah, but don't discount Messi, obviously. And then you've got any of Salah and Mane.
I kind of like Salah for it.
Salah, you're saying Salah?
Oh, I don't know, whatever. Yeah.
Mbappe, Salah.
Yeah, I'm going to go Lewandowski. I'm going to go Lewandowski.
Haaland's not an impossible shout from now. Now that he's got Hattie.
You need normally, if you get like 11-12, then you're definitely in with a shout, and they're going to play Genk again. So there you go, there's another 3.
He only had 3 shots last night and scored 3 goals.
Jesus, really?
Yeah.
Created a couple of chances as well, though, didn't they?
Okay, then biggest flop?
Biggest flop. I'm going to go for, I want to say Tottenham again. I don't think they are going to make a dent this year.
I'm going to go...
But I've not thought that through. Go on, you go first.
I'm going to go Chelsea. I think they might finish bottom of the group.
I think Atleti. If Atleti... They might be great, and they might be garbage. I literally have no way of knowing. But like, they've been more garbage than they have great the last
way
couple of years.
Way too much reliance.
If you haven't noticed,
Felix,
this is all off the cuff. Okay, biggest bottle... you've gone for a British club, okay. I might go for Real Madrid, you know.
Yeah. Their estate.
Winners. Hamill's gone for
They've got no midfield.
It doesn't matter.
It does a bit.
It doesn't matter.
Because their attack isn't that great and their defence isn't good either.
It doesn't matter. Zidane will just work some weird voodoo magic and Hammers will score 13 in the tournament or something. they travelled to, where was it, Leganés on the weekend. Did you see the roster of their squad?
I assume it was horrific.
Absolute insanity. They had three midfielders in the entire squad, and one of them was Hammers.
Quality.
And obviously, the three midfielders started the game, and they won, I think, 3-4, one.
He does look good in a Real Madrid top. I saw him again in a Real Madrid top, and I was like, why doesn't this work, man?
And he does more defensive work than Kroos or Modric at this point.
Right. Yeah. I think that's it. I think that's our Champions League B-side done pretty emphatically. It might have been a little bit all over the place because we have had quite a lot on this week. But hopefully you got a decent kind of gauge of some lesser known sides. So guys, that's extra time for another week. And if you still haven't got your football fix, make sure you take advantage of our collaboration with The Athletic at theathletic.co.uk/Sunday Vibes, all lowercase. That'll get you access to some unbelievable journalism for 30 days free of charge and a whopping 50% off an annual subscription. Like we said, they've added some of our all-time favourite writers to their ranks this summer, so it comes with the extra time seal of approval. Bye-bye.